Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
We're really lucky in the fact that we've got two bowlers in particular on the sidelines that are world class, and we want to make sure that James is absolutely cherry ripe every time he plays. He's available for selection, but we've decided to rest him for this game and make sure that his long-term future is in really good shape.
Nice to have a bit more cricket on our TVs tonight. Tim Payne, the captain of Australia, there talking about James Pattinson, which has got us all talking because we thought
what
Scotty,
is going? This is ridiculous.
That the break between Edgbaston and Lords would be fine now, for Jimmy just to get himself right for that second test back to back.
Before we welcome Colo in,
yes,
James Pattinson's been playing county cricket. They play that every second day, and it's been good for him building up his resistance, and he's bowled really well.
Mm.
8 days is a long time between cricket matches.
No, it's too long.
Okay.
It's the only possible explanation. Let's find out what Colo knows. He's on the ground there getting ready for a big test at Lords. Colo, good morning.
Good morning, Harp. Yeah, it's not so much about the 8 days that have elapsed since the Birmingham test match. It's about the 3 days before the third test at Leeds. That's what underpinned this decision. And I was talking to James a couple of days ago about this, and he said to me that he'd be happy to play one of the two. So I don't think he'll be too disheartened about this. I mean, I think that he probably, like we all did, expected him to play this week, but he would have missed the third test had he played the second. So, I mean, to an extent, this rotation policy, they're not calling it that, but this conditions-based policy meant that there was a high probability of some change, and they pulled the trigger on Pattinson this time around, but that doesn't mean that it won't be another bowler next time. So I guess what we're seeing here is the lack of a pecking order. When Australia were in England 4 years ago, it was very clear who was the top three bowlers and who were the reserve bowlers. Now we have a group of five and arguably six with Michael Nisa, who's bowling the house down at training, who are all like an egalitarian group. Any of them can play based on the conditions they're presented with. So it is quite an interesting situation, one we're not conditioned to. But even though, I agree, Paddo, it looks like on paper an unusual decision to leave him out given how well he bowled last week. This is purely so he can definitely play the third test match.
But why wouldn't you say, Paddo, you're not playing the third? You're playing one and two, then miss three. What's their reasoning behind...
Well, that's it, isn't it? It was a decision one way or the other, and the way they looked at it was that giving him the extra week meant he'd be more likely to be forceful in the third test. So, I mean, just to give you a bit of an understanding with Pattinson, I know he's been on your show regularly, but the last test he played before this long layoff in 2016, he played with a broken foot, a stress fracture in the back, and a torn abdomen muscle. So he had three serious injuries, and he was playing anyway. So historically, he's been the kind of guy who they've rushed, and it's been to his detriment. The 2014 test match at Cape Town's another one where they brought him back straight in on very little first-class cricket. He broke down straight away. So I think that they're very mindful of giving him the best opportunity. Look, whether there is an element of wanting to shake it up as far as not letting England settle as well tactically, that hasn't really been gone into by Tim Payne. He's mostly featured on the idea that he wants to make sure that Pattinson, Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins and co are all able to get to the finish line with all of them still fit. So, look, I share the view that I would have thought that Lords is a fantastic place for Pattinson to bowl, given that he has played there quite a bit. He's played there for Nottinghamshire. Of course, he played the test match there in 2013. And I would have thought that given the conditions we've seen at Lords this year as well, which have been very helpful for fast bowlers, that it would have suited him really nicely. But at the same time, it'll also suit Josh Hazelwood, who's the most likely man to come in tomorrow for the second test match, and then Pattinson will get his opportunity the next week at Leeds.
We talk about previous regimes and their pecking orders, perhaps from a bowling perspective, Colo, but how does Mitchell Stark feel about all this, that his spot in the pecking order, it seems, has gone all the way down? If Hazelwood does play, he's missed out the first two tests, and he was our number one strike bowler for so long.
Yeah, well, it's a funny old career arc, isn't it? In the first 15 test matches that Stark played, he was dropped, omitted, rested 11 times. So he never played three tests in a row until his 16th test match. And since then, he's never been dropped. He's never been rested. Sure, he's missed test matches through injury, but as you say, he's always been the first pick when fit and available to play. So it is quite a big philosophical shift to be leaving Stark out of the side. We spoke to him a couple of days ago after the Worcestershire county game, the tour game, and he's in pretty good spirits. He seemingly has signed up to this idea that as a group of five or six fast bowlers, that they're all going to get an opportunity. he's pretty relaxed, or at least publicly he's pretty relaxed about it, and he knows that he'll get his chance to influence the Ashes series. So, look, whether they're putting on a brave face or otherwise, they're certainly publicly all seemingly signed up to the Justin Langer philosophy that he wants to have these fast bowlers rotating throughout the course of the five test matches. And the other thing to remember, of course, is there's never been a five test match series played in such a short space of time. Because of the World Cup this year, the scheduling for this Ashes series isn't ideal, which, again, I think is a large part of the thinking in the planning here.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about that because it is obviously a Nash's campaign is a massive one. We don't look at it with just one test. Is this the right approach? Is it the right approach to have this lack of pecking order, or do you think as it goes on, the uncertainty that brings might just be a bit destabilising?
I'm quite interested in it, sort of almost like from an academic perspective, like how it will change cricket. Like going forward, we know with baseball, with pitchers, that they rotate through as starters, and there's never really too much leveraged on who's one, who's two, who's three in the pecking order. They just have a rotation, and I'm not saying that cricket will become that. It never will become like that exactly, but it is an interesting exercise because you go back 4 years, and I think a lot of this is to do with what happened 4 years ago. There were two pitchers at Edgbaston and Nottingham, which Peter Siddle had to play on. They were built for Peter Siddle to play on, but because Peter Siddle was number four in the pecking order, he didn't get an opportunity to play in either of those two test matches. He only played the fifth test match when Josh Hazlewood eventually got injured at Nottingham. So I think they've seen the example of 2015 with the pecking order, it not working. They've been too rigidly held to it then, and they've realised that in England you have to be a bit more nimble, and that's why we're seeing the situation we've got at the moment. So, look, the one caveat I put on that is that even though this Lord pitch appears harder and dustier, if you like, and drier than the one we saw a couple of weeks ago when England played Ireland, every game I've been to a Lord this year, and I think I've been to every one of them in terms of first-class cricket, there's been tons in it for the seam bowlers. And we saw last week with Pattinson that he generates so much movement with that Duke's ball. I do wonder whether the comparative advantage for him would have been at Lord's. But as Tim Payne said today, they want to give him the best chance of playing a few test matches. And I guess they've made a call based more on that than the conditions tomorrow.
Well, how focused are the Poms on getting Steve Smith out?
it's the whole conversation. It's the only question that Joe Root is fielding questions about, really, is about Stephen Smith. So, look, the fact that Jack Leach will almost certainly play tomorrow reflects the fact that Smith statistically has a slight quirk against left-arm orthodox spinners. He averages 35 against them. You go through all other bowling types, and it's considerably more than that. So that's why Leach has come in for Moe and Ali. And then you look at Sam Curran, he's a left-arm swing bowler. He's a feisty customer. Look, I don't know how they're going to fit him into the 11 tomorrow, but I'm certain they're going to find a way. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Joe Denley misses out and they do some reconfiguration of their batting order to make sure that happens, whether it means elevating Ben Stokes or Josh Butler into that number four position. Because Curran was so good against India last year in a hyper-competitive series, which could have gone either way. It really did turn on a knife edge in two or three of those matches due to Curran. So he's young. He's not been bruised and battered by international fare. He's only played about 15 times for his country across the three formats. So I think they see Curran as the kind of guy who can come in and be influential from the get-go. And then they drop for Archer. So statistically, his other weakness, if you like, and I'm saying that in inverted commas because it's hardly a weakness, but very, very tall bowlers with release points that are very tall seem to have worked against Smith early in his innings. And Archer, even though he's slightly short of his Stuart Broad, the way that he releases it is from higher than Broad, so he should be able to extract any advantage there. But, I mean, that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a bloke who's on debut tomorrow. He said in his press conference yesterday, Jofra Archer, that he's not going to produce miracles on debut. So, I mean, there's probably a happy medium here. Some people are calling him a white ball specialist. Well, that's nonsense. He's played 29 first-class games for Sussex, which is a pretty significant sample size in terms of red ball cricket. He's been outstanding for them. He averages 23 in first-class cricket. So he's no white ball specialist. That's a complete media concoction. But at the same time, you can't expect a guy who's brand spanking new to test cricket to come out and, you know, be Bob Massey from 1972. That's a black swan type occurrence. So I think that England's expectations are managed. He's going to be one member of their attack. He's not going to be sort of the silver bullet tomorrow either.
Interesting you talk about having to maybe rejig their batting lineup. I thought that must have been the case when they picked Jack Leach, because all we know, Colo, is that he's a specialist tail ender slash night watchman who comes in against Ireland and does a good job. Surely he's not expected to get Steve Smith out with bowling his little dobblers.
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, on paper, yes, Jack Leach is an honest county bowler, but he's done quite well for England. He's only played a few test matches, but he bowled very nicely in Sri Lanka last year. He was excellent in New Zealand on his first tour. So he's a legitimate specialist spinner who gets to traditionally bowl in quite favourable conditions down at Somerset at Taunton, where it does tend to rag. So if there is any wear and tear in the pitch at Lords, and as we know, it tends to be a hard surface, which does give something to the spinners later on, well, there might be something for him there. But he's not a wrist spinner. He's not flamboyant. There's not a lot going on there. He's belt and braces, but he's very accurate, which Moeen Ali wasn't last week. So that's a big plus in the column for Leach. He'll be able to dot Smith up in a way that the off-spinner couldn't last week. So, yes, there's that quirk about left-arm spinners, which, to be completely honest with you, I don't buy a lot into that, because two of those wickets were when Dean Elgar was bowling his part-time filth at Smith. It got him out a couple of times from bull tosses. So I don't really sort of, you know, saw an enormous amount of faith in that. And other times Smith has been dismissed by left-arm spinners because the team he's been playing against has had a left-arm spinner, whether that's Maharaj from South Africa or Jadeja from India or the Sri Lanka's spinner, who is momentarily escaping at the moment. They've had left-arm spinners bowling two kickers their primary weapon. So I think that's the reason why there is that anomaly. But the most important thing Leach can do is keep Smith quiet.
And the radar's not great, Colo. Weather.
Oh, the radar is dreadful, I'm afraid.
Really?
It's going to rain heavily overnight. I've just brought the clothes in because I know it's going to bucket down in London overnight. And we expect that this will persist for the whole 5 days. The radar is shocking. So we've had a gorgeous day today, a perfect day for cricket, and it's going to be followed by 5 days where weather will be a factor. But in saying that, this was the case last year when India played here, and England only required 200 overs across 3 days to get the job done. So I guess what I would note is that conditions have been favourable to bowlers over the last couple of years at Lords, and if it's the case that they get, you know, across the 5 days, 3 days' worth of cricket in, that still might be enough to get a result.
And Ricky Ponting was asking for the best umpires and not necessarily neutral umpires for the MCC, but they have said that no, they still want the neutral status for umpires. We're going to have the same panel still going through the rest of the Ashes?
Yeah, it won't change now. The policy is well and truly embedded. Look, it's an interesting debate about neutral umpires. I think that they need to develop umpires outside of Australia and England. So 7 of the 12 on the elite panel are Australian or English, which poses a pretty big problem when the two countries play against each other. There's only 5 to choose from. So there's a question to be asked about the development of umpires outside of those two countries. But, I mean, the neutral umpire system is there for a reason. I was watching some old tape back from Harbhajan Singh Patrick in 2001, which sort of got them on a roll in that amazing test series where probably none of them were out. And the fact that there's been so much scrutiny over that hat-trick that was an Indian umpire officiating. And, you know, that's the sort of questions that get asked when you don't have neutral umpires. And, look, I don't think umpires like it. They like to believe their integrity should stand above national loyalty or anything like that, or partisanship. But it gives a bad impression. So I think rather than thinking about trying to have Australian and English umpires standing for Ashes tests, the focus more should be, how do we make sure there are more top-flight umpires from other parts of the world?
Interesting topic, considering there's now video reviews and DRS, not quite as important perhaps as it once was. But it's a topic for another day, Colo. We're very much looking forward to what happens tonight, our time, tomorrow, your time, for the second test at Lords. Hopefully we get a fair bit of play. Hopefully that rain stays away. Appreciate your time, buddy.
No worries. Have a good day.